It is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Chris Kington Barker is hosting the program from home today while practicing state and county recommendations during the COVID-19 virus. Her guests will be joining the show by phone today. And today's topic for discussion is the continuing need for childcare in the community and the challenges of childcare centers reopening amid the pandemic. We encourage you to participate by sending us your questions for today's guests by email to voices@kcbx.org, or you can call them in to us at 805-549-8855. I'll turn it over to you, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Sarah. Childcare is an essential for the economic vitality of any city. Unfortunately, like many businesses and organizations, childcare providers are also suffering as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. My guests for the first half hour of today's show are here to discuss the continuing need for childcare in the community, especially now for essential workers and those returning to work as COVID-19 lockdown orders are eased. And they are Shayna Paulson, Children Services Managers with CAPSLO, Child Care Resource Connection, and Rochelle Bollet, the Quality Early Learning Manager and Child Care Planning Council Coordinator for CAPSLO. In the second half hour of today's show, we'll be joined with a visit from Monica Grant, CEO, San Luis Obispo YMCA, Kim Love, Director of Bright Life Play School in San Luis Obispo, and Jamie Bonamatsu, Director of Valley View Children's Center in Arroyo Grande. And I want to thank you first for being here, Shayna and Rochelle. I appreciate your time, and boy, you sure have a lot on your hands right now, right?
We do. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. You know, the idea of childcare coming up right now, this is not the first time that childcare has been a challenge in the county, is it? I mean,
no, prior to this pandemic, our community was already grappling with a lack of childcare options and access. Families were overwhelmed by the cost of childcare, and our childcare businesses were struggling. They were challenged to attract, retain, and adequately compensate their early childhood professional staff. And then, of course, the businesses themselves were finding that the cost of quality programming was far more than any family could bear.
So, you know, it's been a long time since I've had a child in childcare, but I do have kids who have grandkids of mine in childcare, and the cost is unbelievable for me, especially since all of my kids have more than one child in childcare. Is this a perception that childcare providers are making just oodles of money on this, and how far from the truth is that?
It's pretty far from the truth, but it's definitely the perception. I know as a parent, when I brought my kid and I multiplied how many kids were in the classroom by how much, like, that would be so much. But we know there's substantial data to support it that our ECE professionals are underpaid. Many have to work multiple jobs. They are not adequately compensated for their work or their education. So this is work our community has been doing for a long time now, but it's shared work because parents, those costs can't be passed along to parents. But in order to provide quality care for children, especially during this time, there are some significant costs associated with that.
Can you talk a little bit, Rochelle, about what some of the costs are under normal circumstances that childcare providers incur for provision of good quality care to children? Yeah. What are they required to do?
So we do have licensing requirements that stipulate how an environment needs to be set up and the square footage of it. But when we're looking at our mixed delivery system, which means there are center-based programs, but also childcare that happens within someone's home, there's different arenas in what we're looking for in terms of even just overhead of what their rent might be, what their mortgage on their house might be, and then the different pieces that they need to adapt within that building or that facility. You have to have the furniture and all those pieces. And that's just the tangible resources that we need to have, but the staffing. So staffing is the majority of what goes into childcare and all of the expenses that go into the business. And that's not something you can cut corners on. We have very strict ratios that need to be followed that are through our licensing. But then on top of that, when we're looking at quality, we're looking at even lower ratios and being able to support that. And what that means is we're having more teachers, less children. And so those expenses get compounded. And when we're looking at it in normal circumstances, it was already tight enough. And now in our current circumstances where we're trying to limit how many children are together, that expense gets even more compounded.
For the child care providers, if they're required to have employees or ratios, are those ratios dependent on the age of the children or the number of the children? So can you give me some examples of that?
I'll let Shana pop in on that one. She's good with that one off the top of her head.
Well, it depends on which type of setting we're looking at. So in family child care homes, you can have a small family child care license and be able to serve up to 8 children as one adult. And then, of course, there's a difference between, you know, the number of children. So they may only have 2 children under the age of 2, and then they would have 2 school-age children, and the rest would be our preschool age children. For a large family child care license, they're looking at having at least 2 adults, and they can serve 12 to 14. In our center-based programs, the license is based on their square footage indoors and outdoors, and they have their classroom separated by age group typically. And so then you're seeing ratios of potentially one teacher for 12 students, but usually there are aides involved in others. Now that we are experiencing this pandemic, the licensing agency, the state, and public health all has guidance on what group sizes should look like and how many adults should be engaged in those groups. And so the key for that is that sidesteps what a typical classroom might be. So if a program had a few teachers in a classroom with 24 students, and they now need to adapt that classroom so only 10 children can be in there, and they still need to have one adult, but they know that it would be so much better for quality and for the situation we're in to have multiple adults, then your staffing ratio to children, your space is just not conducive to a viable business. And I know a lot of sectors are struggling with this, but childcare in particular is in this transitional state where programs are trying to reopen and they're just not sure how to make that happen.
Yeah. When you talk about the kind of equipment that childcare centers need, is there specific equipment that they need to acquire and provide for the children that they're taking care of?
I think there's the basic health and safety equipment that needs to be there to be able to have, you know, facilities for children in terms of having a bathroom that's child size, different pieces like that, or the ability to adapt it. Mm-hmm. So that we're looking at that part of it as well. And within classrooms, being able to provide the materials that children can use for learning and play. And again, on that same note of how we're trying to adapt classrooms and disinfect everything in between children and making sure that, you know, spending your entire day cleaning up after kids and disinfecting every time they touch something, that's also coming into play and how the space is even used and what activities can be done with children.
With the employment of other child care workers, I'm assuming there's also the cost of these are employees, so there's workers' comp, there's all of that for consideration. These are not just contractors that are coming in. These are actual employees, and they have to maintain their payroll, pay taxes, all of that. So that's an expense that's incurred as well, correct?
Yes, a huge expense in terms of a small business being able to maintain their own workforce and their employees through all of this, and being able to support not just their normal payroll but even thinking about now, as you don't have as many children enrolled and you're not bringing in as much income, how are you able to keep that same amount of staff employed? And on top of just keeping them employed, all the extra precautions that need to be taken to keep them healthy and safe. And it's not easy. It's not cheap either. And so we're looking at what that might look like and how programs need to be able to adapt to serve their families while keeping everyone safe.
Are there child care centers that are open right now that are available?
Yes, there are child care centers that are open right now. So programs have been allowed to serve the children of essential employees since this event began. And as other sectors open up or businesses open up, then child care programs are able to serve them. During this time, we saw some significant losses, particularly in our center-based population, where we lost temporarily almost two-thirds of our licensed child care centers. Of course, all after-school programs were inaccessible to families for a time, and we were really concerned about how we would provide access and choice to those people who were in need of care during this time. But what we've actually seen is that the number of families looking for care has been relatively stable. Of course, it's hard. It's always been hard to help families connect with a program available to meet their needs for non-traditional hour care, so evening and weekend, and sometimes our essential workers are in need of care during those hours. But what we're seeing from programs, what we're hearing is that they're largely underattended. So we're seeing very small groups in childcare programs, which is conducive to creating plans and protocols and implementing systems that work for parents and work for programs to keep children safe. But we do believe that a lot of families have lost their employment, and so they don't need childcare. We know that there are a lot of people who are working from home and trying to make that work. We know some people work in sectors that continue to be deemed non-essential, and so they're not able to access care during this time. But then we've also heard that a lot of families have heeded public health advice, which is to reduce your family's exposure. And so they're relying heavily on family members that may have already been in their group and having children be cared for in those manners. So you can imagine, just like other businesses, that this is creates a lot of fear on the part of childcare business owners. They're really concerned about the viability, if they will be able to bounce back and have a business once this is over.
Do you have a sense of how underserved the community was going into this from a deficit of childcare providers?
You know, we always try to put metrics to that, but yeah. Somebody has opportunity to talk to parents when they're seeking care, I know that they don't feel they have adequate choices, that they are on waiting lists for programs they'd like for their children to get into and are unable to find a good match for their family. So parents are resourceful and families are dynamic, and they're doing all sorts of things to make it work, either because they can't access a program that they would prefer, or they can't afford it, or they're, you know, all of those kinds of things. So we do know that our county only had about 7,500 slots for children before. And remember, when we're talking about childcare, we're also talking about early education. So it's not just about parents' needs. It's also about the education of children and the support of families. And that's what they're seeking in our local programs. And we have a pattern of not being able to fully meet that need in this county.
Yeah. And do you have a sense now that you're hearing back from childcare providers of just how many of them are without children, with a loss, and haven't been able to access the funding, the emergency funding that some small businesses have been able to get provided, or have any of them been able to get that?
I would say that we are hearing that programs are very concerned. Some have opened and only had one or two children and then chose to close again. Some had surveyed families, and as it got closer to the opening date, they found they just didn't have enough to pay their staff. and have backed off. Those are the things we're hearing most recently. We know that some have tried to access funds. We know that we are in an extremely generous community, and more, you know, chambers of commerce and communities are seeing that childcare businesses are a part of their local economy and vitality. And so they're being included in those opportunities. I would say that not everybody is getting their needs met.
Sure.
I'm Chris Kington Barker for you at Central Coast Voices, your KCBX public radio station. And we're having a discussion today about the continued need for childcare for essential workers and those returning to work as shelter in place restrictions are eased, and some of the challenges for that. My guests for the first half hour are Shayna Paulson, Child Services Manager with CAPSLO, Child Care Resource Connection, and Rochelle Bollet, the Quality Early Learning Manager and Child Care Planning Council, Coordinator for CAPSLO. If you have a question or comment about our topic, we'd love to hear from you. You can call that in, excuse me, to 805-549-8855. Again, 805-549-8855. Pardon me, got a tickle here. Talk a little bit about some of the challenges for physical distancing, for cleaning, for all of that.
There are a lot of challenges. For those of you that know children and have seen or been around children, and what that even looks like, you try to tell them, you know, don't touch each other, even if you have siblings, that's not going to happen. And so we're looking at that and how incredibly difficult that is. And even along the lines of physical distancing from and for the providers and our teachers and the educators with the children, it's very difficult to maintain that because children are kinesthetic and tactile, and that entire bond, that relationship that is extremely important, happens because people are close. And so we're looking at what that even looks like. How do you keep children apart and then consistently try to disinfect everything behind them? Again, if you've been around children, they're very quick to touch everything in their way. And they're not always savvy and aware of what they are doing. And so that's where we're looking at that challenge of educators being able to be there for children without having those regulations impede the relationships that are being built and the foundation of learning that's actually happening.
You know, you mentioned having to clean up after every child when they go to the bathroom. I would think that adds to staffing.
Yes.
If you've only got one or two kids, you're now looking at more staffing for fewer kids, fewer income. So that's got to be a hardship on the providers as well.
Yeah, and being able to just try to balance that. I mean, it could be just a full-time job disinfecting behind children, everything that they're touching and going through, and that balance between educating and learning and caring for children and being able to meet these health and safety requirements.
Are you having to work with the providers about what to use differently in terms of education? What can be cleaned more easily, what cannot?
Yeah, so we are offering some technical assistance and support in that, and being able to just look at their environments and be able to, if it's something that can be cleaned, is it absolutely necessary that's there? And being able to not have as many options so that they can be rotated and cleaned periodically versus having to continually take all of your materials out. So we are looking at how we can help support that. And I have to say, all of the providers we've been working with and talking with are extremely creative in how to make that happen and still being able to make an environment that is enriching for the children without just taking everything away. So they've been very creative and resilient in that capacity.
So what do you do in terms of physical distancing with the children? I mean, that's not something that comes necessarily naturally.
I think that's one of the harder topics that we're looking at, in terms of, you know, how do you keep children apart? How do you keep children from coming in, giving their teacher a hug? And what does that even look like? We're still navigating what that looks like. We're still navigating, I think, what face coverings and masks look like, especially for children. That's keeping something on their face is not going to happen. For those of you that have children or have been around children, just trying to keep, you know, a shoe or a sock or a sweatshirt on is a pretty tough battle. And now we're going to try to keep a face covering that is actually doing its job, not just something that they're playing with. So it's a challenge. And I believe our providers and our teachers will rise to however they can make it work to keep children and families and their employees healthy and safe.
What are some of the requirements, Shayna, for the schools? What do they have to provide?
So the requirements are really circle back to CDC requirements. So they're beholden to licensing requirements, which are linked to CDC guidelines, which are linked into OSHA, and then of course our local public health. So there are a lot of different entities providing input into best practice. I would say that all of them understand that in the end, we're working on supporting and educating children. And so when we're talking about hand washing, it's not standing over them. It's talking to them about what hand washing is and why it's there. Our programs are so skilled at social stories, and they're going to be able to help children just understand that people around them might ask. Some of these children are coming to programs after having been mostly isolated at home. So when they step out into the world and it looks very different, that could be really scary. So many of our programs have been doing, you know, Zoom meetings and staying connected with families and staying connected with their children to help really build that education. So when they enter the program, they're able to be a part of the practices that are going to contribute to their health and safety. So, you know, we talked a little bit about that regular and deep cleaning that needs to happen. We're seeing as children go outside, somebody runs in and cleans everything. We talked about, you know, between bathroom times. And so all those cleaning activities are happening regularly. Programs are being asked to make sure that their child groups stay together. It's just that group and just those teachers, and they're not commingling. If there are siblings in the classroom, they want them together. So again, you're reducing the exposure to other families. So there's so much for programs to understand about what's expected of them. But in the end, these are all small businesses. We have a beautiful county with some really unique programming, and I think that that will stay. So there, people are talking to one another about when are you using masks? How are you talking to children about it? There are resources to one another, but in the end, they are creating their own unique and supportive, loving environment as all these children are going through this shared event that's overwhelming for adults. So
do you have a sense, or have there been very many of the child care providers who fall into that group of individuals that are at high risk, that they're no longer available to really be a part of that child care provision? And what's that look like in terms of what that's done?
I've spoken to a few family child care home providers, as well as some center directors who are in that category. We also know of some center directors that have employees in those categories that may be more vulnerable, and they're really unsure. And so what they're doing right now is they're embedding, they're making changes to their physical, to their physical space. They're doing everything they can to prepare their environment for children, and they're going to be making some decisions about how many children they accept and when they reopen. But they know that their health and safety, as well as those of other people who either live in the home or work in the environment, is the priority during this time.
What are some of your biggest concerns at this point? What are for you, Rochelle? What is the you know, something that you think people need to be most aware of, or that you either caution people or maybe want to encourage people about this?
I think just overall, when we're looking at this and remembering that childcare and early education is essential, it sets the foundation for children. And we were saying that all along before, but even more now. And as Shana was saying, all of the supports and the social emotional component and the foundation for children, and looking at this as, you know, a traumatic event, and what this looks like and how that's going to impact them. And then when we're looking at childcare in general, it's not just who's watching the children. Childcare is very dynamic. It also includes a lot of family support, that families are learning how much support they received actually from their programs. It's not just that they get, you know, someone to watch their child while they are going to work. There is a whole lot of extra supports that go on for families through their growth as a family while their children are growing as parents and figuring out how to parent your child. There is a lot more that goes into childcare. And then the other piece of all of this too is that it's not just for children and families, but childcare supports our workforce, our economy. These are small businesses. It's not the state-funded programs that we're looking at that all have continued funding. We're looking at a lot of, and especially our county, a lot of small businesses, family childcare, and privately owned center-based programs that have to look at not only the care for the children, but as a business, how do they keep afloat with all of the requirements, especially on a very human-centered business. It's not, they can't make cuts in care. You can't make cuts in how you're going to serve the children and how you're going to have as many employees as you need to make sure everybody is healthy and safe. So,
Shana, what is your advice for parents? I mean, sending their children back into childcare situations, it's going to be different, right? So how can they assist with this? What are they going to be called upon to do differently? And how can they help the child care providers in preparing their children for it? And what do they need to be prepared to do?
Right. So now's the time to be a really good consumer. So as they have the time to think about what their values are, what their fears are, those are some great foundations for building questions for the programs they're considering taking their children to or taking their children back to. So programs are doing a really good job of laying out the expectations for families, what families are expected to do in terms of how they're bringing children to school, if they'll be able to go into the classroom, if they should be wearing masks, all of those. So programs are telling families what's expected of them. And they're also letting families know what they can expect of their programs. And it's always going to be about finding and maintaining that match. And the best way is through communication. We're hearing that programs are, you know, they're giving virtual tours for new families. They're communicating over Zoom and having meetings ahead of time. It's really important to understand that childcare is community. It's really small little communities that are created. And so there needs to be a shared understanding of what's safe for all the children, because each family is going to be bringing their children in and exposing other families to what they've been exposed to. And so it really is about tending our community at all times.
Are there going to be some childcare centers that are going to require the children to wear masks?
There probably will be. In all instances, CDC guidelines, you know, that if you can't maintain that 6 feet of distancing, there will be some programs that feel that masks are going to be necessary. And again, programs are serving all different ages of children, and so they're responding to all the programs. And then we know that the state may be releasing some different guidance soon, so we're just all watching for it. I would say, if I had the opportunity to, that, you know, we're really concerned about whether childcare businesses will be able to bounce back from this. And if we know that these changes are important, but we don't know that they're sustainable. And so what does it mean for our community if programs do not reopen? That's what keeps me up at night.
Yeah.
You're deeply individuals in these programs. We want them all to have jobs. We want our community to still be vital after all of this.
And Rochelle, is there anything you want to finally say about this? We're getting ready to go into a break, but I wanted to make sure.
I just want to say that the appreciation for childcare and families and early care and education has risen to the top, especially from parents, employers, providers, employees that need childcare. We're really being able to highlight how essential, how important it is. And that's great that at least we can have that through all of us.
I want to thank you, Shayna and Rochelle, for being here today. We're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to send it back to you, Sarah.
Thanks for tuning in for Central Coast Voices. If you have questions that you want answered today, you can send them into us at voices@kcbx.org or call them into us at 805-549-8855. Stay tuned for more Central Coast Voices on KCBX. Good afternoon. You are listening to Central Coast Voices on Public Radio KCBX. If you have questions that you want answered for today, send them in to us. And you can call 805-549-8855. Chris Kington Barker is hosting the program from home today, and her guests are joining her by phone. Chris?
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah. Welcome back to Central Coast Voices and our discussion today regarding the recent pandemic's effect on childcare and childcare providers. And my guests for the second half of today's show will be talking about the challenges of readying childcare sites and how they plan to keep children safe. And we have three guests: Monica Grant, CEO from San Luis Obispo County YMCA; Kim Love, director of Bright Life Play School in San Luis Obispo; and Jamie Sanbonamatsu, who's the director of Valley View Children's Center in Arroyo Grande. Welcome. Nice to have you here. And, you know, I guess I'd really like to talk about, I'm going to start with you, Monica.
And, okay.
What kinds of things has the Y been doing? Have you kind of shut down all of your different after school programs and all of your functions with
Sure.
kids?
So I'll give you the, so like everyone, I mean, we were based in many schools across the county. So when school shut down, we shut down toward, you know, I think it was the last in mid-March. Since then, we have launched an emergency child care day camp program called Camp Care. And we've run it now for a month in San Luis Obispo. The program has been growing, is doing really well. We are following all the strict COVID-19 guidelines. So we now are serving 55 families in SLO, and we are expanding now to South County, Grover Beach, starting June 8th. And that program will, Camp Care will continue to grow and expand and evolve into our summer day camp programs this summer. So we are offering on-site day camp, which will be also COVID-19 guideline specific.
Can you talk about those COVID-19 guidelines and what that looks like? What, how is it different from
the day camps from before? Shane and Rochelle kind of summarized that, but I think the Y is really benefiting from having gone into this emergency child care early. We've been able to live in that space and are doing really well with the guidelines. Our staff are doing great. The kids are having a great time and parents are loving the program. So, you know, in a nutshell, there's temperature checks of staff and children as they check in and check out. There's, you know, a series of questions that are asked to the parents around health checks. There's constant hand washing throughout the day and sanitization. Our staff wear masks unless there's some physical reason why they can't. Children are not required to wear masks, but we have adequate space. For example, we're at C.L. Smith, and now we have 3 rooms with the possible expansion to 4 rooms, 10 kids in a room. So we're able to, we call it physical distancing, not social distancing, but basically 6-foot distancing. So those are the basic pieces, and, you know, it is definitely extra work for the staff, but they're doing an amazing job. So, you know, to me, a lot of this is how you handle your curriculum, because you have to build into your curriculum how you're going to space those kids. Right. But it is obviously an extra task for staff, but they're really rising beyond their expectations, to be sure.
What is the age range of the kids that you're serving right now?
We are serving grades K through 6, and that is going to be what we will be focusing on for our summer day camps, K through 6.
And what's been the biggest challenge you've had?
You know, I think the challenges were different at first when we were launching, just because it was such a new phenomenon. The biggest challenge, honestly, is staffing. There's so many, you know, we could grow this program more if we had more staff available, and we are actually hiring. I want to put that out there. The Y is hiring for our day camp programs. We're looking for great leaders. So, you know, a number of our staff were not in the position to come back at this time, which is understandable. So there is a huge need for childcare, and the Y wants to be there to support our families.
Okay. And Kim, I'm going to go over to you and talk a little bit about your organization, your programs, and some of the challenges you've been facing.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Our preschool child care center serves 60 children. We have a capacity for 60 children ages 2 to 5. As soon as the public school system shut down, we tried to remain open. The next Monday, we were open, but only 6 children came out of 60. So there was no shelter at home in place at that point. And we tried to, but it didn't make sense. And we had a lot of staff that were very nervous about being there, so we closed. We are trying to open up June 1st. So that's where we are.
Have you done a poll with parents to find out what you estimate will be the number of children that'll be coming back?
Yes, it's actually been really encouraging, because I think people are becoming more and more comfortable with the thought of coming back to school. And we've also written, you know, for our school, a pandemic policy that shows exactly what we're going to do for each part of the day, our cleaning and disinfecting, our methods for keeping kids safe. So we will be able to open two classrooms, only two out of three, because I don't have enough staff that can come back. But those two classrooms, we are full with 10 in each. But that is still one third of the capacity that I have.
Wow. And I had asked in the earlier half hour, whether they were aware of any of the schools who applied for any of the emergency funding. Is that something that you did?
Yes. I applied to the PPP program, right. The Paycheck mm-hmm. Protection, right away. And we did receive that. So we received that at the very end of April. So our employees were able, we have 8 weeks of pay for them. We've been active the whole time, having contact with our families, conducting Zoom meetings and circles and Instagram posts. And so that's been great because they've had more time to do that. We've definitely had some issues because some of the teachers are making more on unemployment with an extra $600 a week. And if they are also required to be at home because their children are out of school or they're caring for a family member, they don't want to come back. So I am I'm getting nervous about being able to have my loan forgiven because I have to give them the job offer. But if they decline, that goes against my loan.
Yeah. Jamie, is this familiar to you in your circumstance?
We're a private, nonprofit, faith-based center, so there's a lot of the funds that were available that we're not eligible to apply for just due to the circumstance of that we're a nonprofit and we're faith-based. But I was fortunate enough to have enough in reserves. I've been able to keep my staff employed, and we stayed engaged with families and did Zoom classrooms and provided materials from the day we started. We were closed on March 19th when the order went out for shelter in place. And then we just continued from then on providing things, got up to speed on Zoom. And I was just lucky to have that. We have had good support through some grants through our community care resource and CAPSLO that have helped support all of our different centers. But in that case, I've been lucky. A lot of private centers had to close and lay off employees, which will be hiring back, like Kim, and how that looks and what that looks like.
Do you have a date for reopening?
We reopened on this Tuesday, May.
Oh, you did already. Okay.
We had planned. I was ready as soon as every 2 weeks I was ready, waiting for the next thing that we could reopen, and it got longer and longer. And so once San Luis County was able to move into the latter part of phase two and childcare could open beyond essential workers, then we had that opening to do. We had 73 children enrolled. We do only have about 14 to 16 a day that have come back. Mainly part of that is our student body. Many of our families are teachers and or they have siblings in the school system, so they're staying home and they're a little unsure about coming back out in the public with the unsurety of that. The ones that are coming back, the children needed this. It was ready. This has been hard on young children, this whole event. And the families trusted us. We had protocol, like Kim said, and Monica, we have protocols in place. We send out letters, what we expect from the parents, as far as making sure they're healthy coming in, and then what we're doing to make sure that we're healthy here, and the cleaning and the policies and procedures throughout the day, which is creating more. And so it's ended up being good. It's nice to have that soft opening because there's a lot of things we're able to figure out with very few children here. So it's very manageable right now. If the numbers stay as they talked about in your earlier half hour at 10 per classroom, I already have 65 children pre-enrolled to start in August. And so I'm not sure how that changes. So we're all hoping that there's something in early childhood that is adjusted to meet the needs of the care that is going to be needed in our community as families go back to work as summer goes on.
And what is the age range of your students, Jamie?
2 to 5 until they go to
away. 2 to 5.
To formal school.
Do you know, for any of you, Monica also included, do you envision that this is going to change what you're going to be doing over the remainder of the year? Do you see this as changing?
Absolutely. Science? I mean, absolutely. We, at least for the Y, because we've run, you know, once summer's done and we're completing our summer day camp programs, we are going to be back, hopefully partnering with our schools that we work with around the county and before or after school. And as schools are still grappling with how are they going to run school, which is a daunting proposition, giving everything. So, you know, we are now working on scenario planning around, you know, whether it be a staggered school day or a staggered school week or a staggered school year. The issue really for us will be how much space can a school give us to run these programs, because you need a lot more space due to, so you know, the physical distancing. And how will we do that in, you know, integrated with the school model? So there's a lot of unknowns.
That's a
big question.
Does this raise your cost of providing care?
Absolutely. So I will just say, you know, for the why, we've been able to run emergency child care because we're running it as a subsidized program. It's low cost, and we have funders that are helping us do that and community partners that we're very grateful for, including CAPSLO and Community Office of Education and our school districts that are helping us run this program. But it is not a money-making proposition. This is something you do as a subsidized effort at this point.
And how about for you, Kim?
Yes, it's been very challenging. So I did not ask for tuition from any of the families because many of them lost their job. So when we closed, we haven't been able to have tuition come in. We've had some contributions. So even going down to 20 and opening in now in June, that's not going to come close to our bills. I'm not going to raise tuition unless I absolutely have to. But if this continues on to July and August and fast forward to September in the fall,
right,
I'm going to have to raise prices because I don't have any.
And Sarah, you have a question from a caller?
We just had a listener suggestion that came through on the call line at 805-549-8855. A listener suggested that a lot of the problems in trying to find healthcare, childcare, could be eased by people who are at home and capable to help each other out. Parents would need to reach out and let others know that what they specifically need, and it could be reciprocal and would also help to rebuild the community.
Anybody want to take that and what that might mean, what that might look like?
This is Monica. I think certainly, you know, if and when it's appropriate for families to be helping each other, that's absolutely an individual choice that works for some people and that doesn't work for others. You know, I think those of us who work in childcare will say that when you're, you know, childcare in its truest sense requires, you know, a certain skill set, especially if you're working more than with one child, you know, a group of children. And when you add on the COVID-19 safety expectations, that really requires, I can't imagine doing what we're doing now had we not had all the years of childcare experience and expertise and that we've had. There's no way we would have been able to do this program successfully and safely. So I think you really do want to just be cautious and aware of what is required in this climate to be caring for children outside of your own children.
Jamie, do you have anything to add to that?
Well said, Monica. It's as we are, we do have a special skill set in working with young children, the ages of 2 to 5, and providing needs for those families that do need care outside the home and making it as high quality as possible. And we've spent a lot of years in recent history, especially in our county, getting ready and providing quality programs for the children that are here, keeping those low ratios and more staff in a classroom for those interactions and the social emotional growth of children that are so important for them to move on to the next phase in their life. And so we are one part of that. The family is always a part of that child's growth, and we are privileged to be a part when they need us. And then the child and their interaction and relationship with us as a broader part of their family helps them in that growth. And along with, as Monica said, the skills we have in working with groups of children, those are valuable now. And now to that, we've added the extra health and safety, which is very important to us for not only our children's staff, but also their families at home. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's worth it to us to go to these extra measures. But the other side of that is, how do we keep a staff employed with all the staff we need to do it well and safely, because that's our first priority with children? And also, how do we keep the environment as enriching and appropriate for young children within guidelines that are made for adults and older people, and what's reasonable? And so we're always weighing that out and looking for best practices. And then communication with the families clearly on that, and families asking us and questions, so we can put them at ease, because it is hard for everybody to move out into something that's unknown. But I'm grateful for the trust we have at our center with our families and all the efforts we're putting into it, that they know that we have everybody's interest at heart.
Yeah.
I fully agree with both of them, and I think they said it just like I would, Jamie and Monica. That's exactly how I feel.
You all obviously talk with other providers too of childcare. I would assume there's a general concern about the viability of some of the childcare resources to remain if this goes on for any prolonged period of time. And that can talk about what can happen as a result in the community, the impact of that.
I mean, my feeling, this is Monica, yeah, you know, there were major issues, as if you're a child care provider in this county, and I think Shana and Rochelle addressed that, you know, there were some real critical issues prior to COVID-19 around the sustainability and feasibility of child care in our county. Now that has been exacerbated, I think, in every community, in every part of the U.S. and beyond that. You know, my personal feeling has always been that while this is a multi-layer approach, there has to be a state strategy around supporting childcare. It's too vast and it's too big a price tag to sustain childcare without some real, legislation around it. Now, that's hard when you're talking about significant budget cuts, and everyone's going to be fighting for those dollars. But if we are in all agreement that childcare is a key to economic development, there has to be some kind of a strategy around sustainable funding to support providers and families and to continue childcare. I would say, secondly, we've all addressed staffing as being an issue.
Yeah.
You know, we are all going to be hiring. You know, childcare is going to be an area that there will be jobs because of the need. But how do we incentivize? There's just so much providers can pay. How can we incentivize as communities and as a state for individuals to go into these professions? So that's a big question that has always been there. And it's not like there's a growing number of people going to childcare. It's been just quite the opposite. It's been a downward trend over the years. So how do we stem that?
Yeah, there was a period of time where childcare development seemed like decades ago. It was really a preferred topic or subject in some of the schools. I think even in Cal Poly, childcare development was a very popular course. And now it seems like that has dropped off. Other kinds of healthcare services, like nursing, has dropped off. Do you have a sense that could turn around at all?
I mean, I would love to say that's true, but I think it's going to take some work, and, you know, possibly economic realities will incentivize more people to go into it, but it's a hard job. You know, it's a great job, but it's a hard job.
Yeah.
So I think that's a, you know, it's an important conversation around how do we motivate and incentivize people to go into this work, and how do we pay them a wage?
Right.
I think the Y's come a long way in that regard, but we'd like to get, you know, continue to get stronger. How do you do that in sustained programs?
What about for employers too? You talked about state support. What about employer support at some point, looking at how to integrate some kind of financial benefit for childcare?
Go ahead, Kim.
I was just going to say that, you know, we have some of those examples. One of the excellent examples is Trust Automation in San Luis Obispo, who has provides child care for their employees. I have in particular been reaching out to businesses hoping that I could partner with them, or that our center could, because it would help us to be able to pay our teachers even more, or maybe offer health insurance, which is incredibly hard for a privately owned child care business to be able to afford. And so I am completely open, and I know a lot of other places would be, to partner with businesses and help provide that for their employees.
We have about just a couple of minutes, but I want to make sure that if there's something we've left on the table that is unsaid, please let me know. Monica, I'm going to start with you. Anything you want to wrap up with?
No, I just want to thank my colleagues, you know, for providing what is a critical service in this county. And I would just say to the parents out there that are sitting on the fence around childcare, you know, kind of to Shana's remarks, I would say, check out the provider, ask the questions you need to ask. But I will say that there are safe ways to provide childcare now, and that kids can have a great experience. So I want to end on that positive note.
Thank you. And Jamie, I'm going to go to you real quick.
Again, we're a field of caregivers, and we work in partnership with families in our community. And we're lucky here to have the support we do. We have We Are the Care that works with businesses, county, state, and local providers in trying to solve this problem for families and the care centers. And thank you for the time in this forum.
Thank you. And finally, Kim.
I just wanted to say a little bit about First Five Slow that has helped so much. And people can please go to www.firstfiveslow.org to find out more about how people can contact our local government to ask for what child care centers need to survive this critical time and beyond. And I just want to thank you guys for having us. And CAPSLO has been so helpful to the providers here and the directors, and we'll get through this together.
All right. Thank you. I want to thank my guests for today's topic, Shana Paulson, Child Services Manager with CAPSLO, Rochelle Boulay, Quality Early Manager, Learning Manager with CAPSLO, and Monica Grant, CEO, San Luis Obispo County YMCA, Kim Love, Director of Bright Life Play School, and Jamie Sanbamatsu, Director of Valley View Children's Center. And I want to thank Joan Giller Sargent for her support for this show. I'm Chris Kington Barker. You've been listening to Central Coast Voices.
The preceding program represents the views of the speakers and not necessarily those of KCBX. KCBX welcomes the comments of those with divergent views.